This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super J Cast. I'm Joel Abraham, joined by Damon McDonald. Damon, what do you think of Tottenham?
Tottenham are shit.
What do you think of shit?
Tottenham.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I guess I thought.
Yeah, you remembered the bit.
I did remember the bit.
I sprung that on you.
You did.
You weren't expecting that, were you?
I didn't expect it. I was like, oh, wait, I know this. Wait, I know this. All right. I got you, right? So, London is red, right?
London, North London is red.
Let's just fuck it.
The whole of London is red. Why not? Fuck the other London teams as well.
Chelsea
we'll take what we can get at this point.
Right.
And I will do this every single time for the rest of the lifespan of this podcast. Anytime Arsenal beat Spurs, I'm going to open the show that way. So
right,
if there's any Spurs fans listening, I apologise.
I don't. Who cares? I'm an Arsenal supporter now. The penalty box, we're an Arsenal bar. I made that official to Joel. So, we'll fight in the streets. What? I'm in gang warfare now. I'm a hooligan. Can I be a hooligan now? I'm going to be a hooligan. I don't want to be a hooligan. That seems very stressful. A stressful life of being a hooligan. Being in a crew, is that what it's called? Being in a crew? Is that what it is? You know. You're in one, right? All right.
One day, Damon, we'll make that movie about the warring pro-res fandom firms in Tokyo knifing each other in the streets. Oh, shit, here come the DDT boys.
Yeah. Oh, great. Basara's around the corner. that would actually be... A novel concept. I like that. I like that idea a lot. Boy, we're both feeling it today, aren't we, my man? You're not getting much sleep. I didn't get much sleep. It's going to be one fucking hell of a podcast, right?
Yeah, I'm very worried. I'm a worrier. I didn't think I was a worrier, but this is starting to get to me after a fucking year. You think, no surprise, really.
You want to talk about it?
Well, the situation is very fluid. What I'm hearing at the moment is if I manage to get my hands on the Chinese-produced vaccine, then that would be possibly a route to bring my family back to China. Like, I can go now. I can apply and leave them here, but I don't want to do that.
Sure?
Because
I
like them. Okay, they're grown on me, Damon.
All right.
We celebrated Esther's birthday last Friday. She's 1 year old now.
Yeah,
isn't that amazing?
You know what?
How time flies.
Really? 1 year. Holy moly. That's fucking unbelievable. You know what? Come to think of it, don't we have an anniversary? Wasn't it around New Japan Cup that we started doing this?
I think it was Dontaku.
No.
I remember it was around Dontaku 2018, I think. The first episode, appropriately enough, recorded from a hotel down my end. So.
Okay. Esther's
a running theme.
I know, I saw the pictures.
Had a lovely little party. All our little baby friends came.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. Look.
So, like, this is what I'm saying. For whatever reason, I am... I hope this doesn't happen. If I have to go back first without them and they follow later, at least I can say I was there for the first year to see all the milestones, you know, first steps, first birthday, all of that stuff. Because, okay, so everything from sort of 1 year to 4 years old is kind of... You can wave that, can't you, Damon?
Ask my dad, I don't know.
Gosh.
I don't
know. I apologise if I can't bring the energy to this podcast because I've just been up I'm not sleeping very well. I wake up in like 5 a.m. and then start worrying, start thinking like, oh, what will happen if my headmaster emails me and says I've got to come back immediately without my family, and then I won't sleep. That's it. That's my sleep ruins, and that's how my brain works. My brain hates me now. So
yeah, your brain will.
Manny's very supportive. She'll tell me like, oh, just, you know, stop worrying. You can't control it. Everything will be fine. Don't worry. We'll make it work. Whatever happens, but.
You know, and that is the truth.
Can't stop those voices.
I know that is the truth. If there's any truth in all that, that is the truth. Is that you will find a way to make it work, right? You will figure it the fuck out. But I get the stress, and I get the anxiety of it, and I get the fucking mental, the fact that your brain wants to fuck with you all the time. I get that absolutely. And that's the hardest part, is to kind of quiet that. And that's where I turned to alcohol, Joel. So I don't suggest that route. Please be very clear. That's that. What can I do to help? What can I help? Don't tell me.
Get me a fucking COVID vaccine. Get me a Sinovac.
Find a Pfizer. All right, listen. We have a very wide
network.
Not the
Pfizer. It's got to be Sinovac, otherwise they won't accept it.
It has to be Pfizer.
This is the new... Sinovac. It's got to be that.
Sinovac?
It's got to be the... Sinovac, the China-produced one.
Oh. You don't want that Bobo brand.
I don't care. I'll fucking inject myself with bleach at this rate if that's what it takes to get my family home. All right,
so we need the fucking Sonic brand or whatever the fuck that is. Could somebody help Joel? I mean, we have a lot of... Look, we reach far and wide. There's got to be somebody out there that can DM Joel and give him a path to find this fucking... Because, again, you are the only one that needs it, or does the whole family need it?
I think it's just me.
All right.
That's my understanding. It could be Mally as well, but she's Thai, so I think she's got a better chance of getting it first than me.
Really?
No, my understand. I don't have this confirmed. I don't think Esther needs it. If they say kids can't travel without it, then we're fucked, because there is no safe approved vaccine for the children. I hope they have the common sense to say that kids can go without being vaccinated. If they do say that only vaccinated people can go, then we're back to square one. So I'm not ruling out that possibility either. But yeah, if you're out there and you can get me a dose of the Sinovac COVID vaccine, get it out to Bangkok, then I will shake your hand.
I'll shake your hand. I'll eat your ass.
I'll kiss you on the cheek. I'll do my Paula Abdul dance for you.
I'll barrel my nose right in your butt cheeks, pal. Let me tell you. My suggestion was, let's get Joel to New Jersey. Slide him right in. I'll get him in here. Get him all shot up. Get a couple drinks. Get him back on a plane. That's my plan. Or I say Groucho Marx glasses. Slide right on into China. Never know it was you. Your name is Lance McGillicuddy. That's your alias.
That's what my name would be if I went to NXT.
Lance McGillicuddy. Yeah. That doesn't sound far from the truth, to be honest. I'm worried about you. Now I'm worried about you. Because you didn't sound right even when I called you. I got to be honest. You didn't sound right. You didn't sound like the regular Joel. And I was worried and it's concerned. So now
it's because of the time change, Damon. I needed that hour to mentally prepare myself to get me in the zone for podcast co-hosting. And you messaged me an hour early. I'm like, oh shit, the clocks must have gone back. So
I did fuck you over on that one.
I'm blaming you. And I haven't had time to finish watching Strong. So the listeners are not going to get my my piping hot takes for last Friday's, Saturday's episode of New Japan Strong.
Rocky Romero just hit pause on this thing.
Yeah.
We'll
come back to us next week, Rock.
Yeah. We'll get you.
I got nothing for you, man.
We'll get you next week. I was just a little concerned. But again, we have our network, our army of maniacs that can that, look, if anybody can do it, it's not the U.S. Military. It's not China's government. It's our New Japan Pro Wrestling podcast listeners who's going to come through for you, Joel, and make it happen. Wouldn't it be amazing if it did? I'll tell you what. I kid. I'll put it right on the record. If any one of these listeners, any one of you maniacs, find a way to make this happen, and I need it to be proof. I don't want just like a little vial and it's like sugar water, because then I'll kill you. But if you get this this vaccine, I'll eat your ass. I'll put it right on the record. I don't care who you are. All right? How's that? How's that for dedication, Joel? How's that for...
I'll join you. We'll both do it.
We'll both will clunk heads as we get in and eat the person's ass. We'll just blunk our heads together like fucking Shibata and Okada trying to get into this person's ass. Yeah, I will do it. I hope she's really cute. Please. Riley Reed.
I'm not fussy. Beggars can't be choosers, Damon.
That's true.
Take what I can get.
I don't care who it is. I don't care who it is. But yeah, let's see what we can do. I mean, look, shot in the dark, but maybe Robbie Eagles will come through for us.
Or Tapler, who definitely doesn't listen to this podcast. No.
You don't think so? You don't think? Who do you think listens?
She's the only person in the wrestling fandom that I know of who's in Thailand.
Yeah. You think she can get it?
No.
Rats.
I would maybe ask my brother-in-law. He's a big shot with the police.
Yeah?
The Justice Department here. Yeah.
Where?
I'm sure he'd be able to pull
where you are right now?
Yeah, in... Well, I don't know exactly which region. I probably shouldn't be talking about this publicly, but
I know.
Let's just say things work a certain way in Thailand. Ah. Well, actually, probably the same way politics works everywhere. They're just more transparent about it.
Okay. Well, let's just say this. Donations. You want to give out the donation link again, Joel? Maybe we might need that to be a little...
redcircle.com/super-j-cast. Get me some bribery money, because right. That's how shit gets done here.
Right. Listeners, maybe you can help that way. Maybe you can help that way. For bribery money. Is this in any way illegal, this recording, at this point? I hope not.
No, this is going to get us into a lot of trouble with several international governments. So maybe we should move on and talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Let's do that.
Before I incriminate myself any further.
Yeah. All right, let's do that. Pro Wrestling is the name of the game, right? Okay.
Right. And we have the second round of the New Japan Cup to talk about. I know the quarterfinals are taking place as we speak, but I'm not going to watch those later. So we're just going to do second round today. And let's go to... Now, I know we talked about the results of these matches briefly because they were taking place as we recorded last week. But the matches themselves, you presumably have had a chance to watch them. Toriano defeats the Great Okan 30 minutes, 2 seconds via some kind of bullshit. Still annoyed about it, Damon. Your thoughts on the match?
Look, I don't think the match was anything great, and I didn't think anything was great about it. And I complained at the time, and I'm going to complain about it now. It just makes no sense to me. I mean, I know they like to keep things fresh and surprising, but I don't think that's the guy you're doing the fresh, surprising shit. You had the guy, match of his career, beat Naito, destroy everybody around him, and he can't get past fucking Yano? It just makes no sense to me. It just makes him look like a boob. And that's the last thing you want to do, is make him look like a boob. And then, that put the rest of Empire, United Empire, in somewhat jeopardy, because then Jeff Cobb had to win, and... I don't want to skip ahead, but if you're a United Empire fan, you're in trouble. Yeah, it sucked. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all, and I didn't like seeing it when it happened. And it's just that I'm not one to complain a lot about booking, and my guy didn't win, but I just don't understand that one.
I kind of mentally prepared myself for his defeat when Yano tied his braid to the railing, because I thought, oh, okay, well, that's going to be the finish. But then when he got the little tiny knife or scissors or whatever it was, I was like, oh, wow, he's outsmarted him. And I thought at that point, that was the false finish, right, and Okan was going to go and win. And then, I can't even remember what it was, a bull shot roll up. I don't know. But yeah, they got me with that, because I thought Okan overcoming the hair tying thing was going to be it, his moment of triumph. And he looked scary, Yano running away going, I'm scared. I thought that was quite funny, but he lost. His hair looks good now, actually. I don't know if you've seen Okan's hair without the braid. He's looking, he's got a bit of a glow up, I think. So if I'm looking for a silver lining here, his hair looks nicer. So we do have a theory from listener Pink Moon from Discord, who says, do you think Great Okan has been a victim of his own success? His subpar win-loss record would be more forgivable if he adapted to his gimmick as poorly as Master Watto. Okan's charisma is obvious to everyone not named Dave Meltzer, but has this charisma become a potential crutch for the booking half-heartedly cementing his dominance? I don't think they're trying to book him the same way that they book in Watto. I think they do see more upside in him, but my feel is that the booking committee thought, well, we'll give him the big win against Naito at Budokan, and that's going to elevate him, and it doesn't matter if he loses to Yano, because everyone loses to Yano, and it doesn't hurt him, but we see it differently.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you, what do you think, see the logic in this, and that's the only logical out is that there are plenty of even bigger names that have got fucked over by Yano. And he is that guy that makes these tournaments interesting, G1 included, where again, you, the idea is that you have to be on your toes, and it's just, I don't know, man. The idea of Tanahashi taking a fall, he's a lot of fucking space to he's a lot of room to take a fall like that. It's not going to ding him up. I don't know if I can say the same thing here. Guy's just, he needs to have momentum. He needs to be, and less than a week before he's beating Naito. It's like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Oh, well, we won't harp on that. Even though we harped on it. What's next?
Okay, let's harp on Evil defeating Jeff Cobb in 23 minutes, 8 seconds with his Evil finishing maneuver. I actually thought this match was pretty good. I've said before, I do not mind the Evil shithousery in moderation, because this was, what, one match within the whole first round of 40 matches. So one out of 14 where there is all that bullshit, I can deal with that. I don't mind. As long as it's not happening in every match or a lot of the matches that's happened with Castle Attack Night 1, I can deal with it. I mean, it's not, I don't love it. It's not my favourite type of wrestling, but I quite enjoyed the match. I thought Cobb looked great. He almost literally carried the match here. He showed great physical presence, and there were some great spots with him throwing both Evil and Dick Togo around it and manhandling him. And I thought he looked really strong, and I don't think he was really hurt by the defeat to Evil. And I guess Evil is just one of these guys now who needs to run deep in these tournaments, because I don't see him doing much else. I don't see him winning a New Japan Cup or a G1 anytime soon. He's not going to be headlining any big shows, I think. I don't think he's going to be winning the top belt. But to sort of consolidate his place as an upper mid-carder, he is going to get wins like this, and he's going to be making runs to, you know, semi-finals and block finals and things like that. And that's his spot in the company now.
Right. And just FYI, you're popping in and out internet-wise. So if you need to reset, just let me know. But I did get the major pops of your thoughts here on this match. I don't know. Evil bores the fuck out of me. You know, when he, I guess we'll call it in control on offense, it's just snooze-a-rama. They had some come back in this match. And Cobb, I agree. I think he was the highlight of this match, but I don't know. I know that you say if we contain it to just evil, it's a little bit more tolerable, but man, it just takes me right out. And it's a complaint that not everybody has, but the people who for the people who don't like it, this is it in a nutshell. You know, you're starting to build up some momentum and it just gets pulled out from underneath you. And I truly believe they could have a really great match. Those two guys could have a great match. It's just the way that they want to make evil the guy who needs to fucking do all this bullshit to get wins. That's how they're going to present the guy. I hate to say it. I don't hate to say it, but I just think it was a waste. It was a waste of Jeff Cobb, and the whole thing is a waste of evil. But yeah, you give me two wastes, and you got a 3-star match. And that's exactly what I feel like he got.
Okay, next match we will talk about is Kenta defeating Minoru Suzuki in 16 minutes 50 seconds by go to sleep. What did you think of this one, Damon?
It was good. I know I think everybody did too. I think everybody had these grand expectations and this dream match of Kenta and Suzuki, who they've had to have wrestled before. I mean, I don't have a cage match loaded up in front of me, but I think everybody was thinking back to maybe, you know, 10 years ago. But even with that being said, I thought the match was really good. Here's what it felt. It felt important. It felt like you were seeing two... I mean, I'm not going to go so far as to be like, this was like, you know, how Brock Lesnar matches are, where it feels like it's an event and blah, blah. I don't know if I'm going to go that far. But it did feel like you were watching something special. You know, again, not to blow it out of proportion, but I think a lot of people watching was okay. This is good. The newspaper spot, of course, was hilarious. Everybody wants to talk about that. I thought the match was very good. Again, not the best match so far that we've seen in New Japan Cup, but in the upper echelon of the matches that we've seen, I would comfortably put it in there. I don't know. For some reason, I did think Suzuki might find a way to get through. And I think my mind started changing during the match. It just felt like this was going to be a Suzuki win. But they probably made the right call. Kent is probably the hottest guy they got in the company. If not the hottest guy, one of the hottest guys. Got a ton of momentum. So it makes sense from a booking standpoint. So no, I really didn't have a problem at all with this match. The only problem I had with the match was that I think my expectations were high just because of the names on the marquee. And that's it. And that's my fault. But for the match itself, no, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, you brought up a really good point there, and something I agree with you about how hot Kenta feels. I think his character work is maybe the best in the whole company. And I think in a lot of ways that is compensating for his in-ring work, which I still think is really good, but maybe not the, you know, tippy-toppy, high-paced athletic style that people might hope from the upper echelons of New Japan. But the character work is so compelling to me. Like, his promos are must-watch every time. They just going all over the place, but really, really entertaining. Like the Okada spoonerisms that he's coming out with, like Mizuki Sunoru and New Japan Puck, and now he's facing Shikagi Tango. Bullying the cameraman, you know, being overweight, complaining about Suzuki socks, getting annoyed that there are no gun sounds coming through when he's doing the shooting entrance like it does for Chase Owens. So he's like, he's turned into this bitter but extremely funny and sharp-witted man who complains and pick holes in everything, but does it in a really comedic way. And not just that, most importantly, he builds the matches too, and also provides the occasional disarmingly thoughtful moment of sincerity. Like, for example, mentioning the earthquake victims or saying that he hopes he made Takayama proud. Just little touches like that. And again, you add that to stuff that's going on in the match. It's like you said, mentioned about the newspaper. And I like the match as well. They pulled a lot of funny faces at each other. And I could be completely wrong about it. It felt like a Noah style of match with them just hitting each other very hard. I mean, Noah before they started doing old man vanity matches, but yeah, I thought the match was really good as well, and I'm just loving Kenta's character work at the moment.
Yeah, he's a notch above a lot of people. It's weird how they just, you know, in a company where people's surface complaint is I can't get into the characters and I can't get into, like, if people just gave it a try and not just sat back on old, not even old ideas, because I don't even think it's really been true, period. But yeah, it's just that, like, Kenta is proof of it. And everybody, when they get a good shot at some time backstage to cut a quality promo. I mean, to me, I don't think there's a better company, right? I really don't. It's hard for me to pick anybody else. I mean, I know people might point to AEW at certain points, and trust me, they got a lot of talented people that can work a microphone, no doubt about it. But man, there's something compelling about just letting people do what they do best and feel how they feel and have some natural emotion in their promos. It's an amazing thing, isn't it? Amazing thing. And I think New Japan helps and leads that. And I think Kenta leads that. So there you go.
Yeah, those YouTube backstage comments are must watch. As soon as they're released, I got YouTube notifications. I watch them straight away because there's usually like one or two absolute gems in there. Like, there's a really good one with Shingo and Kenta having a back and forth, and Kenta's got a bee in his bonnet because in Shingo's name there's the character which means hawk or eagle, so he's saying, why are you calling yourself the dragon, you should be the hawk. And then Shingo's getting Kenta's kanji characters mixed up and saying, well, there's a dog in your name. And then Kenta's going, no, that's the wrong character, you idiot. And it's just something that, I don't know, we feel sort of more at home in a sitcom, but it just seeing these two, like, you know, muscular, angry prize fighters bickering each other about correct application of certain meanings of kanji characters and whether or not it fits the given gimmick is just tremendously funny to me. Just like the juxtaposition of those two things there. So it's just great stuff. People on Twitter seem to love it. And yeah, it's not just him. I mean, there's so many other people in the company who are delivering brilliant promos, like Jay White's are always hilarious. David Finlay is doing David great Finlay's stuff here. With him. So, I mean, we'll come on to them. But yeah, good stuff between these two. The main event of this show was the aforementioned Shingo Takagi defeating Hirooki Goto in 23 minutes, 51 seconds via Last of the Dragon. What did you think of this one?
Great. Fantastic. Shingo is... he's having himself a hell of a fucking New Japan Cup. Let's start there first. And I know there were people that were scratching their heads like, Goto and not Taichi? And this might be the reason why. And that's not slandering the good name of your Lord Taichi, but this was a Goto match for sure. And Goto could hang, it felt like. Like, I don't think he lost a step with Shingo. I don't think it was a matter of
question. Sorry, it's exactly what you're talking about here, and I think shines a lot of light on the Goto discourse, if you will. So this is from Elliot, who says, what exactly is it about Goto that makes us bored with him before his matches, only for us to leave each of his matches saying, all right, Goto is awesome, only to completely forget that by his next match?
That is an accurate point. I am guilty as charged. Yes. Maybe because, and I don't know why this impacts people so much, but the fact that he hasn't won, or he is the perennial loser. But do people really care about that going into the match? Like, do they, like, in a match like this, to me, it's a 50-50 coin toss. Well, maybe not. I mean, I think the idea of Shingo getting a nice, healthy push, you know, makes a lot of sense to a lot of people. But that being said, I mean, I don't think it was a slam dunk Goto win. I mean, I know, again, people who make brackets kind of are reading the tea leaves, but I mean, Goto could have won this. So I don't know. Maybe he's just dry. I don't know. Maybe we're just tired of seeing him. I mean, he's been around for a long time. And he always seems to be in the same spot, I guess. But then he puts on a performance like this, and it's like, okay, well, what are we thinking here? Why are we lumping this guy into this? Yeah, but okay. In fairness, a lot of times you don't know what the fuck you're going to get with Hirooki Goto. Because there have been times where he's had matches, and don't ask me to rattle them off in the head, but I know they're there, where they've under-delivered. And under-delivered big time. So it's not like he's batting 1,000. And every time you drag Goto out there, you're getting a fucking classic. Because he's had some stinkers in there too. I don't know, though. He puts on performances like this, and yeah, they're right. You do. You turn off the TV, and you're like, all right, fucking good match. And you got to remember, oh, yeah, that was Goto. Okay. So, yeah, I would say I'm guilty. So I'm trying to talk it out in my head of why do I do that, and those might be the reasons.
I want to talk about Shingo for a bit here, because it does really feel like Shingo time at the moment. I'm noticing just little changes in the structure and the layout of his matches, where previously in a Shingo singles match, he is the aggressor in the match. But now I've noticed in this New Japan Cup, he is the recipient. He is at the receiving end of the extended beatdown by the other wrestler. So he is sort of placed as the babyface in peril, if you will. And he's the one who gets the fiery comeback from that, which previously, I mean, to my mind, hasn't been the case. So he's getting that babyface. He seems to be playing to the crowd more. He's getting quite a lot of show closing promos in the ring. He's busting out these brilliant dad jokes in his post-match comments, saying stuff like, oh, I update my moves, I'm like your smartphone. And Goto Trouble, he was coming up with some great stuff in the run-up to the Goto match. And I just starting to feel that he could be winning this whole tournament just by looking at those little changes, the way they're trying to make you view this guy as the big babyface main eventer, potentially setting up a final with, you know, could be Will Ospreay, could be Jay White. It's looking like it may be a heel coming from that side of the bracket, and it could be babyface Shingo in the final. And maybe we're finally going to get that big main event push for Shingo, because he's had the little eyeballing of Ibushi when he was on commentary in one of those shows. I forget which one it was, but are you in agreement with me, Damon? Does it feel like something's changed with Shingo and the way he's being booked?
Yeah, I think they're very valid points. If you're looking at it with a little bit of a sharp eye, you're exactly right. So it's like Shingo's fucking Ricky Morton all of a sudden. You know, getting the baby face sympathy. Big comeback. Away we go. And it does look like, as you pointed out, on the other side of the bracket, it's heel dominated and very, you know, the needle is pinned very hard. It's not like these people are there's a gray area with these people, with Jay White, or a gray area right
and
now.
And also, I forgot to mention, his path to the final would be where he's got Kenta next, and then he'd have probably Evil after that. So two, you know, very big heel characters there.
Right, right. That's, and by the way, I know we talked about it last week. That's a hell of a fucking way to get to the cup. I mean, if you look at his path, Shingo's path, I mean, he's got to beat some pretty fucking big names. Okada. I mean, he's mowing through them all. Okada, Goto, Kenta, and then, what, Jay White or Will Ospreay. If you're looking at a path to get to this New Japan Cup, that's a hell of a fucking way to get there. Yeah. I mean, the handwriting's on the wall in this one for Shingo Babyface. But then does that end at New Japan Cup? Let's just say he wins the whole thing. How do you parlay that into Shingo Babyface against the ultimate babyface, Kota Ibushi? Or do you?
Is he the ultimate babyface? Because everyone's the fucking management have thrown him under the bus with this title unification thing. Everyone hates Ibushi now, even though it's not his fault and nothing to do with him. But yeah, who knows? I mean, if Shingo does win the New Japan Cup and we get to Sakura Genesis, people might be booing Ibushi. They might want to see him lose because of this nonsense.
It is amazing, isn't it? There's not a lot of people that I hear, and again, I'm not digging through the halls of the interwebs, but there's not a lot of positivity going into this, is there, for that title bullshit?
I am seeing a lot of I was talking to Manabu about this earlier, actually, because he saw he's listening to a Japanese radio show, and he said that Obari was invited as the guest. So I'm going to paraphrase what Manabu said, that he sort of sensed that there was a dislike towards Harold May, and he says that Obari is like your typical Japanese executive. He says, again, this is Manabu's interpretation of things, because I haven't listened to this, I don't speak Japanese, so I wouldn't know, but he's not got that sort of strong leadership. He's only 46 years old, so younger than a lot of the people working in that company, and maybe a bit of a company man president. Like, for example, he talked about the IWGP unification thing, but didn't really give his opinion on it. And Tanahashi's already said that it wasn't Ibushi's idea, it was the company's decision. But then Obari is still presenting it like it's Ibushi's idea, which is unfair. And a lot of fans, particularly in Japan, are really upset about this unification. And Manabu's opinion, which I agree with, was that the company should be protecting Ibushi and not throwing him to the wolves like that. So it's
weird.
Obviously, it's a company decision, and Obari and the company should present it, should explain it to us, why have they done this, what's the logic behind it, you know, what we want to know what the company's vision is. So, because nobody understands the reason. That was Manabu's point, and he's right.
We want two belts. Why are you merging these belts? Tell us why. We want an Intercontinental Championship. We want a World Championship. Or not World, you know. I'm doing a bit, Joel. It's bombing big time.
It is a funny bit, and I am laughing, but I'm also on mute because I have moved from my hotel room, where the internet connection wasn't great, down to the library. And next door to me in the library, there is a junior management seminar going on for the company Lush. Do you have Lush in the US?
Yes, the bath bombs and all that
That's
stuff,
it.
Yeah.
That's right. So that's, and there's music, there's people on speakers next door. I'll pop next, maybe I can get some bath bombs, because I do like this stuff, even if it's horribly overpriced. But I laughed at your joke, Damien. It was a good reference, and well done. We should get that reference in at least once every podcast episode. I'll do my best.
All right. So we talked about Goto, we talked about Shingo, and how we think his road to a New Japan Cup victory is mm-hmm. right around the corner. We're off to night eight?
Night whatever, and we have Sanada, the Cold Skull, defeating Yuji Nagata in 18 minutes, 18 seconds via rounding body press. Damon, what did you think? It was a match. Yep. A match happened between these two guys. It was my biggest takeaway from this is that, why is Sanada doing extended striking exchanges? Because his forearms, his elbows, don't look like they could crack an egg. He should not be doing that. If you want to, you know, promote this guy's strengths and hide his weaknesses, striking is one of his weaknesses. Don't make him do that, because he did a lot of it here and it looked rubbish.
Rubbish! I watched this match and I saw Sanada, with all capital letters, wearing a very cool jacket and a very cool little mask that shined, the light beaming off of it, and he looked cool as fuck. Unfortunately, a bell rang, and he was asked to perform for 15 minutes. And boy, did I take a nap. Out like a light, Joe. You know, you talk about having trouble sleeping. May I recommend my favorite sleep remedy? Begins with an S and it ends in an ada. Right out. I woke up. That match happened. Look. I get tired of saying it, and I'm sure people get tired of listening to it. And it's just, we're just never going to meet in the middle. Sonata stinks. I can't get over it. It's just there. Cool entrance. Awesome jacket. Fucking cool mask. Hair. Chef's kiss. Muscular. That's where it begins and ends. That's where it begins and ends.
Well, I'm very excited to hear your thoughts on the next match, the main event of this show, which was Will Ospreay defeating Zack Sabre Jr. in 21 minutes, 23 seconds via Stormbreaker, because I haven't heard your thoughts on this match at all. I finished watching it, and I excitedly texted you saying, whatever you're doing, you know, avoid spoilers, just watch this match. What did you think of it?
And I texted back. I said, putting it on right now, as Johnny Rotten would say. Shingo and Okada was my favorite match so far. This one beat Shingo and Okada. I absolutely fucking adored this match. I thought this match was one of the best matches I've seen this year. I mean, it's a short year. We're in the middle of March, mind you. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. It felt like they purposely went out there to not have a match that you would think Will Ospreay and Zach would have. It was almost as if they said, let's do what might be considered the opposite of that. And yet, still mesmerizing spots. And again, the idea of accidental blood helping take a match to another level. And it wasn't like he hit a gusher, but I mean, the visual of his nose being busted open, especially from a guy like Zach, it helped. It really did. And it made the match even more aggressive, violent. It was a fight. It felt like it was a fight, but without the boring, I'm going to drag you to the outside and brawl through the crowd and brawl, and hit you really hard on the shoulder blades. It was like a pro wrestling fight, if that makes any weird sense. Like, I'm going to hit you as hard as I can, not with strikes, but with wrestling moves, right? And everything's going to hurt. I find them amazing, the way that they were able to work this match. My favorite of the New Japan Cup. And I'll go so far as to say, this is going to get a lot of votes for match of the year, come year end. I don't know what online is buzz is, but this match really did it for me. It hit, I don't know, it was compelling, and it was fast paced, but it wasn't like a Will Ospreay spot fest. I thought the selling was amazing. I thought the selling was really good. You know, working over the arm. And even Will, like, doing stuff outside the ring, doing strikes and then kind of going back and be like, oh yeah, he fucked with my arm for 10 minutes. Maybe I should still be in pain. The arm bar spot from the, you know, that came off the top rope. Nah, a lot of stuff I really loved. Great match. I thought it was well worked. Outstanding.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. Repack.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is EUFY Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
It was a match that watching it live and speaking to other people that watching it live, it was me and Andrew Rich just talking about it in the Voices Wrestling Slack as it was going on. It felt like a moment, like something really significant in the history of New Japan. I don't know, maybe this is just my Englishman bias towards it, but seeing these two guys tear it up like that and what is my match of the year, I thought this was outstanding. I said on Twitter, this is a perfect pro wrestling for me. One, right, this is not a 45 minute match. 21 minutes in and out, no wasted time, nothing you could trim from there. I wouldn't want to see another 5 minutes added on for the sake of it. They did everything they needed to do. Really interesting character work there with the reversal of roles, because usually it's been Zach bullying Ospreay, who's been a junior, but now right. Ospreay is beefed up a bit and he's got this new attitude and swagger as leader of the Empire. Then we had a really interesting switcheroo there where Zach was the sort of de facto babyface and Ospreay was the cocky, more muscular guy who was sort of physically out muscling Zach at certain points in the match. You could see Zach getting taken aback and frustrated by that, and yeah, the strikes were great, just ugly, nasty, the forearms and the European uppercuts, and the execution of everything was really crisp. It had snap and a lot of sort of hatred and aggression behind it all. The trash talking was good. I always just enjoy trash talking when it's two English guys going at it, because it just feels like this sort of argument you might hear at a football match. And yeah, that moment that you mentioned about when Ospreay got his nose busted, I think it was the La Mystica, but then his nose is like piss and blood everywhere, and Zach's got him in that submission move. I don't know what the name of it was, but I thought that might have been the finish there. And it was just like you say, just a great visual of the blood pouring down Ospreay's face, and he's desperately trying to get to the rope, and then he sort of managed to rock his body over and turn over, and his leg just kind of arced over and almost in slow motion managed to hook that bottom rope. It was really cinematic the way it went down, and just an outstanding match. I will be very impressed if anything manages to top it this year. I know it's only March, but this is just everything I want to see in a pro wrestling match. And even better than that was at the end of the match, Taichi coming out and giving Zach a lovely cuddle and stroking his face and saying, don't worry man, you did great. Yeah. I wish I had someone like this is subtweeting my wife here, you know, my wife is wonderful. My wife is my Tai Chi, you know, being there to stroke my hair and go, it's okay, Joe, everything's okay, even as everything's falling apart around me.
that's the most romantic thing I've heard in months. That's lovely. Write that on a card. I'm sure it'll go over with her just as well.
You are my Tai Chi.
Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah, I mean, you said it. This match was fantastic. So, unfortunately, Zach is eliminated because he had, you know, even his Gabriel Kidd match, I thought was really good. He always has good fucking tournaments. I love watching him. I'm mesmerized by what he can do in a ring and make it look so easy. That's the thing. He just makes it look so easy, so creative, and so easy. So that means what are we? I mean, so what are we looking at here? Are we looking at what's our semifinals?
We've got a couple, two more first round, second round matches to talk about first, and then we'll get onto our prognostications. So let's talk about David Finley defeating Yoshihashi in 13 minutes and 12 seconds with an acid drop. I wasn't expecting a great amount from this. For a 30-minute match, I thought they packed a lot in there. I thought this was really good, Damon. This was unexpectedly good. And I maybe should have expected more from it, given these two guys are ranked quite highly in our most improved wrestler polls. I think Yoshihashi won that poll. So these two guys who really have stepped up their game. and put a lot of effort in here. It was like two fiery underdog baby faces, just putting it all on the line, see who the better man was. And David Finlay in particular, I think we need to single out for some praise, because he just looks like a completely different guy to 12 months ago. He looks like he is grateful to be in Japan and getting this spot. And I don't know if this is a hot take anymore, but I think he's better than Juice now. He's in good shape. His promos are great. He's always very, very passionate and believable. And you believe it. Yeah, you feel that it's real, the words that are coming out of his mouth when he's laying out how he thinks he's surpassed Yoshihashi, and he's got a big opportunity now, and he needs to seize that with both hands. And his in-ring work is really good. His moves look like they hurt. His strikes are, they've got that snap on them that you expect, and he is able to pull off really sort of creative sort of counters and reversals during this match. The way that finish came, where he manages to reverse Yoshihashi's I think it was like some sort of brainbuster move and turn that into his acid drop, was just very, very well executed, just high level stuff. So I was really impressed with David Finlay here.
I agree with everything you said, right? And it is a great, not a surprise, but just a great thing to see. But I will say this, it means nothing until David Finlay gets a big win. Because unfortunately, he's going to be perceived as a guy that is at a certain level and a certain pecking order. And until the company says, okay, you're going to get a big win over somebody, not Yoshihashi, as much as we are in agreement, yes, fantastic the year last year, one of the bright spots of New Japan, in where everybody's kind of giving it a thumbs down, Yoshihashi was a bright spot. But David Finlay's got to beat a name for all this hard work to pay off. And if you think about it, he's got guys that are lapping him. He's got guys that are lapping him. And I don't want to see him get – like now's the time for that. Like, there's no need to sit back on any type of David Finlay push. Like, it needs to happen now, because if it doesn't, then what? Then what do you do with the guy? Because he's given you everything he's got, it feels like. Doesn't feel like there's a lot that's being held back here. And I say that in a very positive way. Now it's the company's turn to say, okay, we're going to put a little stock in David Finlay. And if they don't, we know where we stand, right? I think David's doing his part. Now it's time to say, okay, this guy needs to do something with that. And then we see where we go. The challenge is, Joel, is that I'm not convinced the company is there for that.
Well, we've got a couple of questions. Matthew says, what are the chances of Kenta and Finlay meeting and David getting revenge in the New Japan Cup USA loss? And Jamie says, should David Finlay get a singles push? Kenta and Finlay, that would require that to be the final of the New Japan Cup, and that's right. Not going to be the final, so it's not going to happen. But as far as singles push goes, I mean, he has a big match coming up in the next round against Jay White, and they've got a lot of history together. Jay White is 12-1. Of course, they're in the dojo together. They had a tremendous match. I think it was for the US title back in 2018, I want to say. That was very, very good. Worth going and watching. And both guys have just improved tenfold since then. So I'm really excited about that. And that could be the coming out party. I don't think Finlay is going to win, but I wouldn't rule it out. I would not be absolutely stunned if he did win. And I think that would be an incredible moment for him. I think the objective with Finlay should be to get him at a level where you can put him in the G1 and people will go, yes, that's a good call. He deserves that, because I think he's more than capable of delivering. You know, he can give him Yujiro spot, you know, he'd be perfectly serviceable being in the G1 climax. I would love to see it. And what a better way to do that than by giving him this big, presumably it's going to be a main event match against Jay White, which I'm really excited for. That should be the acid test, if you'll excuse the pun, to show that he is someone who can hang in big singles matches against the top boys in New Japan.
I agree. That would be a great moment. And again, the history in the dojo and those two having 517 singles matches as young lions, trading Boston Crabs, it helps tell that story. So, yes, is there a way to make that happen here? I think so. right? I mean, that would all but confirm Ospreay making it to the finals, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that. I would love to see a David Finlay, Will Ospreay semi-final. Again, I don't think it's going to happen, but I think that would be a really fresh and interesting match. And I'm getting ahead of myself. I don't even think that Finlay has to beat Jay White to receive a significant elevation in the company. I think if they have a really good, competitive, close match and Finlay pushes him, then you could achieve a similar result. But I think, you know, if you want to really pull the trigger and say, this is a guy that you've got to pay attention to, then maybe he should beat Jay White. Don't think it's going to happen, but it would be a very gutsy move if they did.
I think he should. I absolutely think they should. Again, I think David Finlay's had at least a few of those. Ah, he was so close and just couldn't pull it out, but he's going to make it there one day. Moments like this is it. This is the time. You're not going to hurt Jay White, right? Jay White seems like he's going to have a program with Tanahashi, right, forever. Keep this. Give Finlay the win. Have him lose to Ospreay. Ospreay did a finals. Shingo did a finals. And away we go.
Sticking with Finlay and Finjuice, Sizzlebeef says, with Finjuice winning the Impact tag titles, do they lose them to someone in Impact or maybe someone like GOD, helping the US New Japan guys work closer to home more? And Louis says, Finjuice winning the Impact tag gold, what are the scenarios moving forward? Can they defend those in Strong or in Japan? So, Damon, what are your takes on Finjuice winning Impact tag team gold?
It gives them something to do and work when they leave a Japanese tour. I think it's good for them. What's the Impact tag titles worth to a person? I guess is my question. Like to a wrestling fan, is that something that we're getting excited over?
To me, it feels like a vehicle to get people like Finjuice and the Good Brothers and Gorillas of Destiny being able to work these interpromotional matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we already know there's the synergy between promotions. So, I mean, I have no problem. It's not a bad thing. That's for sure. And it gives them an opportunity to be on TV. When they come home and they're able to make some money while they're home. And again, extend the program, possibly with GOD and Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't know where it goes. I'll be honest with you. It doesn't make me want to tune into Impact, you know, whenever it's on. I don't even know when it's on. Like, I'm not going out of my way to watch it. Now, listen, if they pull out a fucking barn burner match somewhere, yeah, I'll pop it on, but you know, it's kind of like, okay, it's cool. They're Impact Tag Team Champions. What am I supposed to do with that?
I'll tell you what they should do with it. I want to see the Regal Twins, my favorite boys from New Japan Strong, getting a shot at those belts. I don't care where they do it, if they want to do it on Impact or do it on Strong, but I like the Regal Twins, and if they don't get a shot at those titles, what are we even doing here, Damon? We've got a great tag team just spinning their wheels and strong, having very good matches, but let's take it to the next level. Let's make hay while the sun shines. All right, well, let's talk about the final match of the second round, which was Jay White defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi in 19 minutes, 54 seconds. A match that, well, let me pose you a question from Jay Cafe. He says, what's better long-term storytelling? Tanahashi purposely getting fat just to get jacked for G1 season, or Taguchi doing Yano's bit, which leads to a merch sell-off at Wrestle Kingdom? Yeah, this was just hilarious. The build for this match being Tanahashi getting a bit fat and Jay White having an abs off at the start of the match, and Jay White screaming, don't point the fucking camera at him, point it at me, I'm better looking than him. And I just thought that was very entertaining. But then the bell rung. I mean, the match was fine. They've had better matches. They've had a lot better matches than this. There wasn't anything wrong with this one. I liked the finish. It was quite creative, the way that Jay White reversed the dragon screw into the Blade Runner. Very, very well executed, but
yeah,
it was nothing special, was it?
No. It was a very solid pro wrestling match, but nothing where, like, it was, I don't want to say it was like just a flat line, but it was like, I don't know, like it was like a professional wrestling match, if that makes any sense. Like, it was a match that was, I don't, devoid of emotion or like it and I, again, I definitely don't want to say they were going through the motions, because they weren't, but it was just like, when we say that it was a pro wrestling match and it was there over like Sonata and like Yuji Nagata, we were like, that, what I'm saying there is that it's just boring, and they got in the ring and they did what they did. This was a textbook pro wrestling match between two great pro wrestlers who know what they're doing in the ring, that did not move the needle one way or the other. Does that make sense? That's what I felt after it. Like, I felt like I watched a pro wrestling match. Like, if a pro wrestling match were an earthquake, the needle was not moving much at all. You had a little tremor, but you certainly didn't have the fucking wall shaking.
Do you feel Jay White is in danger of losing that magical heat, that, you know, all that buzz that he had post Wrestle Kingdom?
Yeah,
is that gone?
Don't you?
Yep. And because as entertaining as I find him as a heel, like, his post-match stuff where he was being carried to the back on a throne of young lions with Gabe Kidd and Yu Yu Emrah, like, I love heel Jay White, but you had lightning in a bottle there, and everyone was watching him, and I know we've talked about this before, but I'm not seeing any change in his character.
Not only am I not seeing any change in his character, we're not seeing anything that capitalized on those moments of pure emotion and pure real life kind of butting heads with pro wrestling life. Like, I mean, was it us that created all this? All our hard work, Joel, to make this moment even more special? Has that gone to waste? I feel like it kind of has.
We've been betrayed, Damon.
I feel like we lived up to our end of the bargain, New Japan Pro Wrestling. what? I don't feel like they capitalized on that. At least not yet, anyway. I mean, again, could we eventually get there? I guess, but man, we're taking the fucking long way, aren't we? It doesn't feel, let's put it this way, it doesn't feel like anything that happened on the first week of January and then into the first week of February had anything to do with what we're seeing now. It really doesn't. And that's a shame, because if, you're right, for a 2-week stretch, was there, for doing nothing, you know, for sitting at home or lying on the beach and watching it all unfold around him, it just feels like, boy, you had the hottest guy in pro wrestling, and now what? Right? Now what?
In terms of sort of big picture thoughts, looking at this New Japan Cup, I am kind of getting the feeling that the booking has slightly changed this year, that the big four, if I had to say they were a big four, are Ibushi, Jay White, Shingo, Ospreay. It feels like these are the four guys who have been given the spotlight and the big matches and the main events to shine. Are you getting that feeling as well? Like, well, people like Naito, Okada are being downcycled, even Sanada, Evil's taking a back seat.
Yeah. I mean, and that, I think it's a good thing, because they're constantly, like, it feels like New Japan Cup is the tournament to make new stars. And I know a lot of people sometimes want to put that title on G1, But I really feel like New Japan Cup is that tool. And yeah, it does feel like it is that little bit of a shift. And as we go into like Genesis, those guys will be a little bit more of a focal point than maybe Naito or Okada or Tanahashi. Now, there is a common denominator between the three guys that we mentioned. They're all banged up. They're all hurting. So I have no problem. Here's the mentality of pro wrestlers is to work, 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 hurt, work, hurt, work, hurt, work, 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 work through injuries, work. Okay. Take some time off. Rest up. You don't have to be on every show. And hopefully, fingers crossed, that's the mentality that they're taking by giving these guys who are awesome a little bit more spot. Kenta, you can throw in that list too. Giving them more spotlight, because I don't think the company can afford to, especially now when we're not playing the full buildings, the company can now allow some of these guys to heal up a bit and take a break. I think that would be a good thing. And I know the people that they're putting in that position can carry the company for a couple months to 25% crowds, 30% crowds, whatever the number is, and to, you know, and give them at least a couple weeks. But I mean, you mean to tell me that those Corkin shows, those 500 Corkin shows, are going to be any less sold out with Ospreay on top, Jay White on top, Shingo on top, Ibushi on top, Kenta on top? Come on. And Tanahashi not in some fucking six-man tag with Honma and fucking Hanare. No disrespect to Hanare or Honma, who had a good match. But you get my point. Sit home. Sit on the couch. Put your feet up. Get fat. Rest. We don't need you right now. We don't need you right now. You can rest.
Because I got the feeling, Damon, that there's a lot of stuff that we complain about with New Japan and their booking and all the shenanigans and Bullet Club and all that stuff. But I do feel if you put that to one side, for this calendar year, 2021, we've got quite a lot of really high-end matches that, you know, they are delivering on their promise for giving you those high quality main event that we love. And just, I was looking on Cage Match at the top 10 highly rated ones, and of course that you got to take with a pinch of salt because everyone's going to have different opinions on this, but just looking at the top 10, we've got Tanahashi against Shingo, Ospreay against Zach, Cobb against Shingo, Okada versus Ospreay, Jay against Ibushi, Okada against Shingo, Ibushi versus Naito, Despy versus Ibushi, Goto versus Shingo, Jay versus Ishii. So the top 10 matches, and the common denominator for that list, all of them feature those four guys I mentioned. So Shingo, Ospreay, Jay White, and Ibushi. So it just seems that they are the focal point, and you can slide other people into the mix against them, whether you're putting in like a Tanahashi or a Zach or a Jeff Cobb or an Okada or a Naito or an Ishii or even a Despy or Goto, putting into against one of those four guys, and it's delivering big. And I don't know, it just feels like comparatively compared to other years, we're halfway through March and we've got a lot of really high-end matches here.
Yep. And I think that the prospect of having great matches is better with the people that you mentioned. Like, again, this is not a disrespect to Naito or Tanahashi or Okada. These guys have proven themselves time and time again. What I'm saying is that you have a talented roster that can deliver matches that will have the possibility of rival, you know what I'm trying to say. I can't fucking talk. They're going to be right there. So give them a shot, because I think your chances are better than with a broken down, battered Tanahashi, Okada, Naito. Let them rest. The company's in good hands. We know how to make stars. Let's let them go. And they, here's the thing too, for people who were sour on 2020 and have abandoned ship, you're missing out. You are missing out because I think 2021 has rebounded tremendously, tremendously.
Louis says, which wrestler has performed in the New Japan Cup better than you guys thought? My vote's on Shingo. So is there anyone in this tournament, Damon, who's really grabbed your attention and you sat up and thought, wow, this guy is over-delivering on what I expected?
Over-delivering? Well, I was going to say Shingo is having a hell of a fucking run, but okay. Honma definitely over-delivered. I mean, it was one match, but yeah. Like if I'm giving a fucking award for a guy who gave me something that I would never expect. Yep, that's my guy.
Anwar says, has New Japan Cup gotten watered down by expanding the fields? And will we ever hear the karaoke of John Carroll doing Jay-Z big pimping from the G1 Supercard weekend? I'm not sure if any video footage of that exists, but what a great day that was. I still
that
look
really
back with
great
fond memories of that and all the bond off we did. Singing Stand By Me, Oasis together. Oh.
Yeah. That was fucking great. We were killing the drinks. Yeah, that went really fast. Next thing, I swear to God, it felt like the next thing I know, I was walking into Madison Square Garden. Yeah, that was a fun afternoon. That was a real fun afternoon. Yeah, I missed that.
With regards to the first question, though, about expanding the field, I like it. I like having 32, 30 guys because then you get interesting matches with guys like Honma getting his annual singles match and Tenzan or Gabe Kidd or Yota Tsuji, where otherwise if you had the 16 top guys in the company, you wouldn't get to see that. So I personally like the fact that they've expanded it.
Yeah, I see the argument of saying just give me the meat and the potatoes. I get it. But you know, I feel the same way as you, Joel, that I like the idea of getting matchups maybe that I maybe would not have gotten, you know, by adding an extra layer of an extra round to get those first round matches that maybe I wouldn't have gotten before. I mean, do we need to see another Tenzan match? Probably maybe not. But I see both sides of the argument. I might lean a little bit more toward the 16 as opposed to the 32. But I see both. I see both.
Classic Catch says, as Tanahashi, Naito, Okada, and Ibushi get older, does New Japan have a growing superstar problem? There's essentially Hiromu and Jay White who can be that A-plus superstar. What should they do? I see the problem being young, domestic, homegrown guys, like Japanese talent. Because, yeah, once you look past those names mentioned, I mean, who is the next young Japanese guy where you're looking at thinking, yeah, this is the guy who's going to headline Wrestle Kingdom? Because for me it's the young lions, and I'm thinking of guys like maybe Shota Umino or Yu Uemura as being the guy who could step up and be the face of the company, but
that's wild.
They're a long way away, and I can't see anyone between them and the guys that were mentioned in the question.
Yeah, and then even the guys, because it feels like they are at a certain level of young lioness where they're probably ready to take those next steps. And then we got to see what we got underneath. And it doesn't like again, the pandemic being a big issue, but I don't know if we have people underneath that. Now, again, do you turn to Strong at that point?
Turn to the great Okan. He is the guy. Okan should be the person that they're building to be the next guy who's going to be in headlining big shows like that. But on the current trajectory, it's going to take a while before he is accepted as a tippy-top guy.
What about a Carl Fredericks? I mean, that's going to be a while too, mind you, but
he's again, lost a lot of momentum. I mean, from, you know, when he was slotted into the New Japan Cup last year against Kenta in that first round match, and we were all excited, and then the pandemic hit, and he lost a lot of steam on Strong. And
he's
back now, and I'm excited to see him. For me, if I was in charge of booking Strong, that would be the objective in the next set of tapings or two, to put the rocket to this guy. So you make him a star, you make New Japan Strong all about him, then get him back to Japan, and you can take it away from there.
Yep, full agreement. Clark Connors, you could put in that list too. But yeah, that should be the primary objective, number one, is making sure that you're setting up at least one or two guys out of strong to be easily just take the plane ride over and slide right on in to pretty decent programs. That should be the goal of strong.
All right, so you wanted to talk about quarterfinals then. So we've got some of these matches will have taken place by the time you listen to this. Yano versus Evil, Kenta versus Shingo, Sonata versus Ospreay, and Jay versus Finley. So what are your predictions for the rest of the tournament?
All right, so again, Yano versus
Evil.
Evil. You would have to think Evil goes on, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody's thinking Yano wins this, right? No.
Evil's got to get his win back from the G1.
That sounds hilarious.
All right, and then Kenta versus Shingo. I can't see Bullet Club versus Bullet Club, so I will pick Shingo for that. And then we've got an Evil versus Shingo semi-final.
Yep, I see that. And again, I think it's leading to Shingo. Babyface Shingo.
Mm-hmm.
Rocking and rolling to the double drop, kicking his way to the finals.
And then we got Sonata versus Ospreay and Jay versus Finley. I mean, I will pencil in Jay as the winner of that one. Sonata versus Ospreay, I would like... I think it should be Ospreay, but I can't rule out... Yeah, the thought of Sonata winning is very, very real and very, very scary.
It is.
Because I know they really want to go back to that Jay versus Sonata match that they did at whenever it was last year. So I'm just terrified that that's where we're going. I want to see Jay versus Ospreay, but again, that's heel versus heel. I don't know. I have a feel
David
for that
Finley
one.
Wins. I will go David Finley. I talked myself into it. I'm going David Finley. I'm going to be the hero here. David Finley beats Jay White, gets his big win. New Japan backing David Finley. Which would allow Will to get a win over Sonata. Will beats Dave, Shingo, Will, New Japan Cup Finals.
I like it. I will be optimistic and go along with you on that one. It's Finley's time. And just the idea of him having that big semi-final with Will Ospreay would be very exciting to me, even if I don't think he would have much chance of winning. But just the dynamics between them. Finley would be such a great babyface against dickhead Will Ospreay. So there you go. I'm not going to talk about Strong because I didn't get a chance to finish it because of daylight savings. So a couple of questions then before we go. Oscar Rooney says, what non-main event New Japan wrestler would improve Strong? So if you had to send a mid-carder from the current roster based in Japan and send them to Strong to help out, who would you send?
How about that? I'm going to send an older guy because I think that that'll be more helpful to the young crop that's in Strong mostly, and also can still go, and also might need a new coat of paint, just something to build for, something to do. How about Hiroki Goto?
I was thinking exactly the same, Damon. Just
really?
Think, you could have main events like Goto against a Carl Fredericks or a Chris Dickinson or a filthy Tom Lawler.
Right.
That would be great.
I think so, right? I think so. And then, Goto can be a little bit more creative maybe. Have a little bit more room to stretch his creative wings. Yeah, I like that one.
And last question, John says, what is the worst New Japan entrance theme song and why is it David Finley's? I mean, Finley's is very... I couldn't tell you what it is. I could not sing it to you. If you put the gun to my head, then I'd be a dead man. It's bad. It's just very, very forgettable. Have you got any New Japan entrance musics that you think are... What's the worst?
The worst one is... the former Dragon Lee. His hip hop, was it Baby Mama or what is it?
That's very, very bad with very, really bad lyrics. I can't remember what they are, but I remember hearing them on Music of the Mat and thinking, oh my God, Dragon Lee deserves better than this.
It is shit. It would be like a third grader was asked to write a sexy rap song, you know, that you would hear at a strip club or something. It's just ridiculous. That's got to be up there as one of the worst. I'm trying to think of what else is an instant like. Ugh. I would say that's probably number one on my list.
All right. Well, that's it. A shorter episode today. redcircle.com/shows/super-j-casts. Thank you for everyone who has donated, putting money towards the Joel COVID vaccine fund. Discord link is in the show notes. If you want to get one of our t-shirts at Cobra Kawaii and prowrestlingtees.com/super-j-cast. Massive thanks to editor Dan. Find him on Twitter at lousyhero219. Subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network for other great shows. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at the Super J Cast. Thank you everyone for listening, and goodbye.